Hello, my name is Bert van Rozebeke, joining you from the IADI Secretariat in Basel, Switzerland, and welcome to this new episode of the IADI podcast. Today we're joined by Hendrik Nel from the Corporation for Deposit Insurance at the South Africa Reserve Bank. The South Africa Reserve Bank and the National Treasury are associate members of IADI, and they're currently in the final stage of establishing a deposit insurance system that is expected to be operational as of early 2024. The aim of this podcast today is really to understand the latest of evolutions regarding deposit insurance and bank resolutions in one of the major economies on the African continent. So, Hendrik, it's great to have you here today. Many thanks for taking time for us. Maybe tell us, establishing deposit insurance in South Africa. This may come as a bit of a surprise to some of our listeners, so that South Africa, which is, after all, a G20 member, doesn't yet have a deposit insurance system. So what's the reason for establishing a system now? And maybe you can tell us a bit on how bank failures have been dealt with in the past.
Hello, Bert, and thank you for the opportunity to share about South Africa's deposit insurance scheme. So, yes, you're quite right that the introduction of an explicit deposit insurance scheme has been under consideration for a very long time in South Africa. And South Africa is, the last G20 country who will be implementing a deposit insurance scheme. So the lack of an explicit scheme has been one of the findings of FSAPS for many years. And it was after the global financial crisis and the G20 initiative on ending too big to fail through resolution frameworks and a deposit insurance scheme that South Africa, with the National Treasury and SARB, collectively decided in 2015 to introduce a resolution framework and a deposit insurance scheme. National Treasury published that in an official policy document, and it was then put into legislation. We had the Financial Sector Regulation Act that was promulgated in 2017. And then more recently, amendments were made to that act through the Financial Sector Laws Amendment Act that was promulgated in 2022. And now we are in the process to implement both a resolution framework and an explicit deposit insurance scheme.
Okay, so you're working on the introduction of a deposit insurance and resolution system, and we'll come to that in a minute. But tell us, how have failures, bank failures, been dealt with in the past in the absence of such a system?
So how did we deal with bank failures in the past? South Africa has always had implicit deposit insurance. So depositors have always been paid out by government up to a certain limit. So smaller depositors never lost money. But of course, this put a big burden on the fiscus and on taxpayers in general in South Africa.
Okay, thank you. I would guess most of our listeners are not very familiar with the South African banking system. So maybe you can give us quickly a bit of background on the banking system, the players, and the stability overall of the system.
Yes, certainly. So South Africa has a highly concentrated banking system. We have five big banks that hold about 85% of the total assets of the banking sector. Size-wise, the total assets of the sector is about 7.2 trillion rand. That's equal to $400 billion. We have 18 local banks. There's 13 branches of foreign banks. We have four mutual banks that operate under their own act, the Mutual Banks Act. And then we have five cooperative banks and 24 cooperative financial institutions in South Africa. No public banks, although government is planning to establish a state bank and have advanced quite far with those plans.
Anything on the stability of the banking sector?
Yeah, so you know, it's a first world financial system with stable banks, well-regulated, regulation, in line with international standards. However, you know, as the as far as the economy is concerned, there's some serious challenges. Economy is growing very slowly, by less than 3%, also severely impacted by COVID. We have a very high unemployment rate, around 28%. We have high youth unemployment, which is a big concern, at around 50%.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. So turning a bit to deposit insurance now. So you're the interim CEO of Cody. Cody, that's the corporation for deposit insurance, which is 100% subsidiary of the South Africa Reserve Bank. I understand that the Parliament and the President of the Republic have approved the law allowing for the establishment of the corporation for deposit insurance. And the next step is an official announcement by the Minister of Finance that will allow for the official commencement of deposit insurance. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, Bert. So, as I said, you know, the decision was in 2015 to develop a resolution framework. It was then put into primary legislation, and that will now be implemented according to different commencement schedules. So the first schedule will make provision for Cody to become a legal entity. It'll also make provision for the establishment of the official board for Cody and the appointment of a permanent CEO. Then the resolution framework will be implemented in April 2023, and we expect that Cody will be fully operational a year later in April 2024.
Okay, and what is it that must be decided before you can actually go operational in 2024?
Yeah, so what is still outstanding is, and the dependencies are basically, you know, the secondary legislation for Cody. There's also the promulgation of the levies and premiums bills that will enable Cody to collect levies and premiums from member banks. And the secondary legislation, as I said, is also a dependency for that bill, as the coverage limit and the coverage rules are specified in the, or will be specified in the secondary legislation. There's the members' reporting requirements and the formulas for calculating banks' financial contributions to Cody, the deposit insurance fund, and to pay out depositors or support a non-payout strategy will be in the secondary legislation. And then Cody will have a pretty unique funding model, and which includes a liquidity tier, which will be liquidity contributions by member banks in the form of loans on which they will earn an interest, loans to Cody. So that'll be immediately available to Cody for a payout, but that is also will also be in the secondary legislation. And then a couple of other issues such as the public awareness requirements, governance and oversight requirements, and the actions in case of non-compliance, which will also be in the secondary legislation.
Okay, so there's still a little bit to do before you can actually go operational. We'll come back to that funding model later on, so that's definitely very interesting. But maybe we can stay with the institutional setup for a second. So Cody will be an entity within the central bank. So why did South Africa decide for this setup? Because after all, other jurisdictions have opted for different models. Some have chosen to have a totally private deposit insurance entity, other ones a very public one. So maybe you can give us some background on that decision in South Africa.
So the Act sets Cody's objective as protecting depositors and supporting the central bank's financial stability mandate. So it also determines that the central bank will be the sole holder of shares in Cody. In other words, Cody will be a wholly owned subsidiary of the SARB. Now, why this model? So the Prudential Authority, or the supervisor of banks, is also placed within the central bank. It's an independent authority in the central bank. The SARB is identified in the Act as the resolution authority. So, and as I said, the resolution framework includes a deposit insurance scheme. Then the SARB will also fund, or is in the process of funding, the setup cost of Cody, and all Cody's staff is seconded from the central bank. The Act also determines that the SARB should provide support services such as IT, human resources, financial services, internal audit, etc. Also accommodation and facilities to CODI. So all of that, you know, contributed to the fact that the model chosen is one where CODI is placed within the central bank as a subsidiary of the SARB.
And models like these often bring up the question of the operational independence of the deposit insurer. So what are the decisions and the safeguards maybe that have been put in place in South Africa to safeguard that independence?
Yes, so the Act does provide operational independence to CODI, as the affairs of CODI are overseen, managed and controlled by a board of directors. So the board consists of 8 members, of which 6 are specified in the Act, and 2 is appointed by the governor of the central bank.
And this setup, with CODI being 100% subsidiary of the central bank, that's not a temporary issue, right? So that is set up to remain like this in the future as well. Right?
Yes, I think it's set up as you know, to remain like that. I'm not saying it will never change, but for now it'll remain in the central bank.
Okay, so turning to the mandate of CODI, that typically includes. Mandates for deposit insurers typically include depositor protection and contribution to financial stability. Is that yet to be defined in secondary law? And what about financial inclusion? Is that also a part of the mandate of CODI?
So CODI's mandate is determined in primary legislation. So it's already been promulgated. So the protection of depositors and contribution to financial stability is in the primary legislation. As far as financial inclusion is concerned, this is an overarching objective of the policy document of National Treasury with the review of the regulatory framework back in 2015. And the SARB and CODI's contribution to financial inclusion is from the fact that all banks, large, small banks, cooperative banks, even the cooperative financial institutions, will be members, and their depositors are protected. The limited coverage, in our case, it's 100,000 rand or about $5,500, means that the protection is limited and it will focus on the most vulnerable depositors. So those that would be the main contribution that CODI would make towards financial inclusion.
Okay, thank you. So turning to the powers now that you will have as deposit insurer. As you know, Yadi typically differentiates between 4 categories, so pay boxes and pay box pluses, and then we have loss minimizers and risk minimizers, depending on the degree of powers and involvement that they would have in supervision or resolution activity. So where will CODI fit in this differentiation?
So the deposit insurance scheme in South Africa is a pay box plus scheme. So in terms of the Financial Sector Laws Amendment Act, CODI can use the deposit insurance fund to give depositors of a bank in resolution access to their covered deposits through reimbursement, or CODI can utilize the deposit insurance fund to support a non-payout resolution transaction. Currently, we are working closely with the SARB's Resolution and Crisis Preparedness Division in the Financial Stability Department on CODI's role in non-payout resolution strategy. So it's a work in progress. Basically, how it will work is that the SARB, as the resolution authority, will decide on the resolution strategy for a failed bank. Mm-hmm. And in the absence of a resolution fund, the resolution authority may request funding from CODI to support the resolution strategy. CODI's board, however, will consider this request and apply certain minimum criteria before they make such a decision. Those criteria, if I can briefly just refer to that the board will consider, will be that they must believe that the chosen resolution action will contribute to the orderly resolution of the failed bank, that the amount does not exceed the total amount of covered deposits held by that failed bank, and that CODI support CODI support from the DIF must be in relation to the covered deposits of the bank in resolution to preserve or provide access of depositors to their covered balances. So that would be some of the criteria that we're busy developing with the resolution team, and will also be in secondary legislation that the board will have to take into consideration.
Okay, thank you. That's interesting. We'll maybe come back to CODI's role in resolution a bit later on. But now going back to, well, to the very essentials, right, of a pay box, or pay box plus, actually. So what about coverage, coverage level and the payout time frame? Are there any special characteristics that you can share with us on CODI on there?
So the plan is for CODI to protect individual and non-financial depositors. So the qualifying products will include all those deposits, and it will exclude, therefore, all investment products and electronic money. The coverage limit for a qualifying depositor will be 100,000 rand, as I mentioned earlier, $5,500 per depositor per bank. And at that level of 100,000 rand, CODI will protect 23% of the qualifying depositor's deposit values. And it will also protect 95% of the qualifying depositors. The 95% will therefore be fully protected, as most depositors in South Africa has fairly low account balances. And this limit, of course, will be reviewed from time to time. I think we plan to do it every 5 years to ensure that the coverage level provides adequate protection.
Okay, and maybe on reimbursement targets, so the core principles, the other core principles, they prescribe reimbursement within 7 days for most of the deposits. I can imagine this may be quite challenging for newly established deposit insurances. So what are the plans and the ambitions for CODI in South Africa on this?
Yes, you're right, Bert. So that's quite challenging. And as a new deposit insurance scheme, we have decided to give depositors access to their deposits within 20 calendar days. So we've set the bar at 20 calendar days with the intention to reduce the payout time frame over time by improving our data collection, by improved validation processes, doing simulations, and the technology solution that we hope to implement. So the ultimate aim would be to meet that international benchmark of 7 days. We haven't set a target in terms of time when, but we've, as I've said, 20 calendar days initially with the intention to reduce it over time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what kind of instruments are you planning to use when you actually conduct a reimbursement?
So CODI plans to use mainly two instruments for a payout. Ultimately, we hope to do electronic fund transfers or EFT payments into alternative bank accounts, but that would be the long-term plan. Initially, payout agent banks is what we plan to use, and that'll be the only payout method available to CODI initially. And as we may not have the full systems functionality initially, for example, to collect single customer view depositor data and to perform EFT payments at an early stage. So we intend to establish a panel of payout agent banks during good times and then appoint the most appropriate payout agent bank based on demographics or other characteristics of the bank in resolution. Since the banks won't be producing SCV data for CODI initially, it means that when a bank fails, the CODI team will have to work closely with a resolution practitioner and the payout agent bank to get the data ready, for payout. And this might be another important challenge, as it might be a manual process, which will take time and may delay the commencement of the reimbursement process.
Yeah. So much for payout. So let's come back to resolution for a second. because, well, as we know, payout is only one of many options that may be available in managing a bank failure. And other options may include, for example, transfer of deposits in a purchase and assumption scenario, or early action before resolution becomes relevant. So can you tell us, maybe you've alluded to it already a little bit, but maybe you can tell us a little bit more about the role of the role for CODI in resolution or in funding that resolution, given that the central bank in South Africa, as you said, is the official resolution authority. And CODI is 100% subsidiary of that central bank, and that there is another separate resolution fund that available. So it would be very interesting to hear a little bit more about how CODI is involved in that resolution.
Yeah, so the resolution strategy, or the decision on the resolution strategy, will not be within the authority of CODI. So the SARB, being the resolution authority, will decide on the resolution strategy, and with the consent of the Minister of Finance, that will then be implemented. For example, preventative action, avoiding a liquidation and reimbursement, is therefore not within the authority of CODI. However, CODI can be requested to support a non-payout strategy. Firstly, an open bank resolution where the bank is too large, complex, and interconnected to liquidate when they fail. And when these banks are placed into resolution, they will remain open for business, and resolution interventions will focus on restoring their viability by addressing the causes for failure. So that is the one example of where CODI can be requested to support. The second one is for a closed bank resolution where the failed bank ceased to exist in its current form under its own banking license. And that would be mainly for smaller banks, non-systemically important financial institutions, less complex banks, and when the focus is on ways to limit losses to creditors and depositors, as well as the contagion effects on the rest of the financial sector. So the support will be limited to the level of cover deposits. That's the one important condition, and will be dependent, as I said earlier, on a CODI board decision. These are not simple issues, and it might become complicated when you find that the support up to the level of cover deposits for a large SIFI, for example, might completely empty the deposit insurance fund. So then the decision would be up to the board, weighing up issues such as the maintenance of financial stability with protecting depositors and with the deposit insurer maintaining the deposit insurance fund. And those will be difficult choices. The last thing I can add here is that CODI's role will be very limited in an open bank resolution, unless the resolution authority requests CODI to provide support for a chosen resolution strategy.
Okay, so maybe closing off, we can turn to we talked about eligible deposits, we talked about the coverage level, the role in resolution, and you've hinted at an interesting aspect in South Africa regarding funding. Maybe you can explain us a little bit this special funding model that you've put in place in South Africa.
Yeah, so the funding model consists of three tiers. The one tier is the emergency funding, which will be an explicit backup funding provided by the SARB whenever the payout of depositors is more than what the deposit insurance fund provides. For example, when more than one bank failure, when you have more than one bank failure at a specific time. Then the second tier is this liquidity tier, which is 3% of covered deposits. And that tier is in the form of a liquidity contribution of members to CODI, in the form of a loan. So we negotiated for a long time with the banking sector and with the accounting rules, etc., considering those to determine whether it should be a loan or a deposit. In the end, we've decided on a loan. It will be interest will be paid on that loan from member banks to CODI. The benefit of that liquidity tier is that it will be available immediately. So as soon as CODI becomes fully operational and we can get the banks to contribute on the liquidity tier premiums and levies, that liquidity tier will be provided in full immediately and will be available to CODI for a payout. And initially, for the first couple of years, that'll be the main source of a payout. The third tier is the premium tier, and that is 1% of cover deposits. And that'll be for banks to contribute in the form of premiums. As the premiums grow and the deposit insurance fund grows, the liquidity tier will be reduced. So the plan is to reduce it from the 3% of cover deposits over time and eventually phase it out completely. So yeah, I think that is more or less the funding model that we are planning to introduce.
And those tiers add up to a target size of 4% of covered deposits, right?
Yes, that's correct. So according to the last survey, the 4% of covered deposits was about 24 billion rand, 1.3 billion US dollars. Of course, that'll be growing all the time as deposits increase, but it's 4% of covered deposits, correct, yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Henrik. I think it's giving us really a sense of the complexities establishing a new deposit insurance system. And I was wondering maybe whether you can tell us a bit on how that's actually being done, right? I mean, is this something that you just build up yourself, or do you get assistance from external parties when setting up a system like this?
Yeah, so the deposit insurance team started off in the Financial Stability Department back in 2014, then became an independent unit in 2021. Throughout that period, and even now, we've been supported very actively by a team of consultants established by the World Bank, and funded by the Swiss Development Agency, SECO. So they have assisted CODI with reviewing our occasional papers that we published. They reviewed the secondary legislation, first draft of our secondary legislation. We've also consulted actively with the banking industry throughout, both collectively through our banking association, but also bilaterally with banks. So I think those different resources have been of great help to CODI.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Henrik Nell, Interim Chief Executive Officer of the Corporation for Deposit Insurance in South Africa. Thank you very much for your time today, Henrik, and thank you very much to our listeners. This is it from Basel for today, and stay tuned for the upcoming EID podcasts.